A new book from a local lawyer, author, and professor explores his work in eviction court in Indianapolis. WFYI's Aubriana Heron spoke with Fran Quigley about his new book entitled Lessons from Eviction Court, How We Can End Our Housing Crisis, that details the issues that land people in court, possible solutions, and the stories of those facing eviction.
Why did you decide to start here with eviction when writing your book on the current housing crisis?
My day job is teaching at the IU McKinney Law School here in Indianapolis, and the most important part of what I do is students and I go to eviction court, where the law students will represent their first ever clients who are low-income people who are facing eviction in our community. From there, we take a lot of lessons. I'm supposed to be the one providing the lessons because I'm the professor, right? But in reality, the clients and what they're going through and what that indicates of the problems that led them to eviction court and the solutions we could adopt, those were the lessons we really took from the experience.
So alluding to the title of the book, what are some of the biggest lessons that you and your students have taken from eviction court?
Well, eviction court, it turns out, is kind of the entrance ramp to homelessness, unfortunately. People who we represent, people who are in court, their next stop might be sleeping in their cars. It might be at a shelter. It might be an extended stay motel. It may be in the streets. And so folks losing their homes in eviction court, and there's 3.5 million eviction cases filed across the country every year. There's 500 filed every week just here in Indianapolis alone. So this is the step before folks becoming unhoused. They simply can't afford profit-making housing. They can't afford housing that's not subsidized because they have low wages, because they're living with a disability, because they have caregiving duties. The folks are there just because the money doesn't add up to what housing costs in a market where we don't have enough subsidized housing.
Intertwined throughout the book are the real-life experiences of your clients. Who are Indianapolis residents facing eviction? Why was it important for you to include their stories into your book?
Their stories are what taught me about housing and about what led them there and how we can fix it. So when you do have a client who is working a third shift at a convenience store and struggling with sleeplessness, you have clients who have a sick kid or a kid living with disabilities and they can't work that much and therefore they don't have enough income. You have clients who are themselves ill or living with a disability and they can't work and therefore their income is a sub-poverty level. They're the ones teaching us about what the problems are that are causing our housing crisis. And they're also, their situations suggest what the solutions are, too, because it doesn't have to be this way.
A section of your book speaks on the intersection of racism and housing. What does America's racial history tell us about the current affordable housing crisis?
Yeah. Unfortunately, eviction court and, frankly, a homeless shelter and other places are places that you can visibly see the effects of generations of housing racism in our country. Most of our cases and most of our time in court is spent in a particular township court. And after a few weeks, I usually ask the students what they think the population breakdown is by race. And they will estimate that it's 80% black, 90% black of that township. It's actually less than 40%. But the people being evicted are 80% black, 90% black. And that is a completely predictable manifestation of generations of housing racism.
So what is the housing first approach that you mentioned in your writing?
Housing first really derives from the understanding that the reason people are homeless, the reason people are living as unhoused persons, is almost always because they can't afford housing. There are a lot of myths out there that people are unhoused don't want to have a place to stay. They're there because of mental health and addiction issues, etc. And sometimes those are part of it. But to be honest, who we see in eviction court, that's almost never the kind of quote-unquote chronically homeless that you'll see on the streets. They are usually families. And when they become homeless, they're sleeping in a car. They're sleeping on grandma's floor until grandma gets tired of that and kicks them out. They're sleeping in an extended stay motel until they can't afford that anymore, calling the family shelters, which are full every day, trying to get a spot. And so these are folks who are unhoused because they can't afford housing. So the housing first approach just simply treats housing as a human right as opposed to just a profit-making commodity, and says the first thing we're going to do for an individual or a family who doesn't have housing is provide them housing, housing first. And if they need support services after that, if they need mental health services or addiction services or job training or transportation help or childcare help, we'll do that next. But the first thing this family needs, this individual needs, is a steady, stable roof over their head. Then you can work on the other things. Mm-hmm. And so that housing first model has proven to be enormously impactful and successful.
What do you hope readers take away from the book?
What I hope readers take away from the book is that it doesn't have to be this way. We do not have to have eviction courts that are teeming full of families who are getting ready to lose their housing. We don't have to have shelters that are full and people sleeping on the streets of our communities. We know it doesn't have to be that way because it isn't that way in other communities around the world where they do have enough supportive housing to make sure people have a place to stay. They don't understand even what it's like for us to have these eviction courts filled and homeless shelters filled. And really, it didn't used to be that way in the United States. Before the 1980s, we didn't have very many homeless shelters. Before the 1980s, the eviction courts didn't have very big dockets. Really, most folks had a place to stay because we invested in them. And we can continue to do that because right now, if you talk about who has subsidized housing, corporate landlords have subsidized housing because of all the tax breaks that we provide to them. I go into some detail of that in the book. Wealthy homeowners have subsidized housing because the government provides so many benefits to wealthy homeowners. If we take some of those subsidies, move them over to the people who need them the most, you know, we can make sure that people are housed, and we can. It'd be wonderful to put us out of business and not have an eviction court to go to every week.
Well, thank you so much, Fran.
Thanks, Adriana.